Welcome to the film experience. It's been a long time. I am Nathaniel, your host, and I have been between apartments and things have been chaotic. So now we're back. So welcome to Katie Rich,
Yay! I'm excited to be back.
Joe Reed,
Hi.
and Nick Davis.
What's up?
And you guys, we haven't even talked since the Oscar nominations.
I
I
know.
know. How crazy is that?
It's been such a weird season for me. But ha are you guys all caught up on all your Oscar nominees?
Oh my God. No.
I think I
mean, I
have.
still haven't seen Beauty and the Beast. I'm trying to be nice to myself.
Like, sandwich that in between two other good movies, and I feel like you'll be fine. Although, it's a long day, but still, it's probably worth it.
Do you
I
think
think
it
I'm
pairs
down to
well with
six.
Abacus?
Yeah. Sandwich it between Abacus and Last Man in Aleppo, and you'll be fine.
I mean, if you're willing to background watch, which is how I watched like The Boss Baby, I feel like you won't harm
Well,
yourself
that's the
too
thing.
badly.
You're not going to lose the plot because it's the exact same movie as the animated movie. So, like, just sort of check in on it every once in a while, and I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, it's kind of the same, only with bad special effects and worse line readings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say worse. The musical
God, why
numbers are
haven't I
fine.
seen it already? Wow.
So, I am still behind a few. My Roman Israel, many attempts with my screener, and just something always comes up. So, I still haven't seen Roman Israel.
Me neither. That's my one acting nominee I haven't seen.
I went out and saw it in a theater, so I was very happy to be able to do that.
And you
I'm
really
down to.
liked it, right?
I did. I liked it a lot. Nick and I sort of are holding down the Roman J. Israel campaign. I don't know
The
who
fan
else
club
is,
of
but
two.
yeah, it's good. I really liked it. It's a lot weirder and thus more interesting than I thought it was going to be. So, props to that. I think Denzel is fantastic in it. It's like not enough. Like Chalamet is still my vote in that category, but like Denzel might be my number two. I don't know.
And you said you're down to six movies?
I'm down to six features and then the documentary shorts. What is it? Ferdinand, Loving Vincent, The Insult, Abacus, Last Man in Aleppo, and Wonder are my six that I still haven't seen.
You guys, can I for a moment tell you how excruciating it was to sit through Loving Vincent?
Oh, I've heard people don't like it.
I went and saw it with two of my honorary nieces in the city. Because they're very sophisticated little kids, because their dad has them watch old classics and everything. They can sit through like any movie, even if it's totally made for adults. But they were so bored and they kept saying, "Could we
Oh
leave?" And I'm like, "No." But the truth is, I was bored. I was just as bored as they were.
You will appreciate Vincent Van Gogh on all the levels that I do.
How old are these nieces, these honorary nieces?
Eight and 10.
Wow.
So were you able to explain to them, like, we can't leave because this could be nominated in an important category?
No, I had actually told them, I was trying to explain to them what the Oscars were.
Oh.
Because I was going to do little
Wait,
interviews
they're your
about.
honorary nieces and they haven't known what the Oscars are since they were, toddlers?
Well, the thing is, they've been coming to my Oscar party for years, but they were like 5 years old and four. Like, I guess
Ah.
it didn't really sink in.
Yeah.
You've been raising them well. You haven't been neglecting in your uncle duties, but they just have to really get let it sink in now.
Yeah, honestly, it sounds like the problem's with them.
Yeah. Let's not let them off the hook so easily. Do we feel like.
But you guys, I have to share this because it was really funny. Because everybody's like raving about the way the movie looks. You know,
Yeah.
like that it's a painting come to life. And so
Yeah.
as we're walking away, because they knew who Vincent Van Gogh was, so as we're walking away, their mom asks them, so did you recognize any of his paintings? Did you see Starry Night? Did you recognize Starry Night in the movie? And she goes, "That was the whole movie." Which is true. It was like every light was like swirling light. I was like really, I was appreciating her disdain for the movie.
So this feels like a pretty decidedly down year for the animated feature category, all told. Like there are highlights, obviously. I think Coco is great. Were there better options out there, or was this just sort of like the whole field was kind of slim pickings?
I mean, there are people who will tell you that Lego Batman was terribly robbed.
I love though, Batman.
It's good. I don't think I would have. Yeah, I've only seen Boss Baby and Coco, both of which are totally fine. I thought Boss Baby was better than expected, so I'm fine with its nomination. But I don't know that I would go to the mat for Lego Batman. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. From my understanding, some of the finalists, because they don't do that in that category, but some of the eligible titles, the foreign titles, the artsier ones, were stronger.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there's only so much of a contingency that votes for those. Plus, with the rule change, they had more non-animators voting this year.
What was the rules change in the animated category?
Now it's open to people outside of that branch to nominate as well.
Oh.
Which makes sense to a point, but then, like, this still doesn't seem like the movie. It's still not like the five top box office, you know, animated movies of the year. It's still that same sort of like cross section. It just feels mm-hmm. like this particular cross section, like usually the Loving Vincent sort of like, you know, slot is a lot better than this. Usually, I mean, I haven't seen Ferdinand yet, but I haven't heard a whole lot of enthusiasm about it. I think the Boss Baby, I think exceeding expectations is good, but the expectations are so low for that movie that
what's wrong with the like, title The Boss Baby, Joe? It seems like a great title.
I actually enjoyed Boss Baby, and I didn't understand the bile that greeted it when it came out. Other than I think people associated it with Trump, but obviously
our own
when it was being made, that was not the intention to lampoon Trump,
right?
Yeah, I was impressed by the animation in Boss Baby, and then just like, you know, kind of general heartfelt nature to it. It was nothing that surprising, but it definitely was effective to me.
The Breadwinner is really good, I have to say. That and Coco are the class of the category at this point.
Oh, my nieces did like Breadwinner much better than Loving Vincent.
That's a tough one for 9 and 10 years old. Jeez.
Yeah, but they were sort of in and out of it, but
uh-huh.
they didn't hate it like they hated Loving Vincent.
I feel like they're the next podcast, Nathaniel.
The three of us. So they can sit through The Breadwinner and hang in there, but they've been to Oscar parties repeatedly and they still don't understand.
Well, their parents kind of check out of the Oscar parties really early. They sort of come for the socializing, and then because of bedtimes, they ended up leaving before awards started being handed out.
All right, I think we've landed on the culprits
now.
Oh,
now we get it. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But anyway.
This is a lesson, Katie. If you're going to take Charlie to an Oscar party, you got to be committed. All in or all out.
I just like dream of the day that I can watch, like go to an Oscar party and watch them and have Charlie with me and not be working the whole time. We've talked about this, Joe, how like never again in our lives will we not have to work during the Oscars.
It's a grim future we see for ourselves.
I will say this experience with my nieces is a reminder that not all cinephiles care about the Oscars.
Yeah.
Because their dad is a total cinephile. He introduced me to like Jean Moreau's filmography and everything. And he apparently did not instill that in them, even though they watch all these classics all the time.
I mean,
so speaking of dereliction of parental duty, Loveless was really bummer, you guys.
Well, I have to say, Andrei Zvyagintsev, I'm hoping well I'm pronouncing the name correctly. He is building quite the filmography.
Mm-hmm.
Quite the cohesive one too.
Was that a Nick agreement?
Yeah, I was just wondering if your nieces liked this one.
No.
I haven't seen Loveless, and as someone who is not as much of a completist as you guys, like it seems like one I may or may not ever see. How devastating is it, and will it ruin my life?
It's just relentlessly grim.
Whew.
And not in like you see. It's not like a cavalcade of like images you're never going to get out of your head or anything like that. It's just like, oh god, like these. So it's like these parents who are getting divorced, and they, I mean, the Loveless of the title is essentially like it's describes how they feel about their son. Like they just don't have any seemingly no affection for this kid, and then he goes missing, and then they have to sort of find him, and like, is this gonna like reignite, you know, their feel, you know, this is what's gonna bring out their parental feelings of love for the kid, and it does a little bit, but not quite. And it's just a lot of these sort of like long setups of people looking for this kid, punctuated by these sort of like really nasty scenes between the parents, and it none of it's fun. I'm gonna say that right now. It is not the romp of the season.
I will say there is an image in it that I'm afraid is gonna haunt me forever.
Oh, I think I might know what you're talking about.
And I don't want to say what it is because I was so surprised by it, and the camera work and everything was amazing.
Yes. Yes, I know.
I feel like you guys are being paid by Sony Pictures Classics to sell Love Books. This is some kind of corporate marketing to Katie specifically.
Yeah. You guys got paid a lot just to get me to watch this one movie.
But one thing that impressed me about it beyond that is just, you know, so superbly made is that you think it's like a portrait of this like sort of loveless family. But it's really such a larger dig into systemically how people are disconnected from each other. And that I was really impressed by.
Guys, I got to say, I watched the documentary shorts, which for once were not like a relentlessly grim exercise and didn't, you know, they are serious in many ways, but don't make you want to throw yourself off a bridge. And I'm feeling pretty good. And I'm just not sure that I want to ruin that.
Are you sure you watched the right ones?
I mean, all of them are devastating in some way, but several of them even end on hopeful notes. It's an interesting year.
I like the sense of Katie, like, at the blackjack table, like, knowing when to step away. And she's like, I'm up a little bit. I didn't expect I would be up at this point after seeing these movies. And you know what? I'm good.
Saved animated for last as a way to be like, all right, at the very least, I get, I don't hear much good about the Kobe Bryant one, but at least they're animated and probably won't be as grim.
I came across one of the nominees on Netflix as I was scrolling through last night, the longest of them, Revolting Rhymes. So if anybody wants to go check that out. It's not my fave, but it's like it's definitely like entertaining and watchable. I just didn't super connect to it.
Is there not a Pixar one? Usually there's like a Pixar one that
there
I've seen.
There is.
Okay.
Yes.
Lou. And the reason nobody's talked about it is it debuted in front of Cars 3.
Now, I was wondering that when I watched it. I was like, why haven't I seen this?
I thought it was being so good this year because I started watching Finalists. And I thought, oh, I'm going to be really up on the shorts for one of the first times. And then the ones I watched weren't nominated.
This is why I will never watch shorts finalists. Like, it's just such a broad field. It's such a crapshoot. Like, they do the work for you and narrow it down to 5. And they don't take that long to watch.
You finally have your opening, Nathaniel. You could write one of those articles about how the Oscars are broken because they didn't nominate the ones that I saw.
People that I've talked to who have seen all the documentary shorts, I am correct in thinking 10 Meter Tower should have been nominated.
Which one was that
very,
about?
That's very easy to see. It's very readily available online. And it's so, so funny, but also weirdly moving. It's just these shots of people on this high diving board and whether or not they're going to jump.
Oh, I love that idea. That's a fun idea.
It was
on the New York Times site for a long time.
Yeah. It's really, really good. And it's only 10 minutes long and it's just completely gripping.
Nice.
That sounds
great.
And I
can't believe it didn't get nominated. Because it's so memorable too. I thought for sure it would.
I wonder if that was a subject matter casualty where many times, you know, documentaries are judged by the seriousness of the subject matter. I will say the flip side of the animated shorts being not that good, this was easily my favorite live action short.
Live action shorts are good.
They're all really good. I liked all 5 of them.
Yeah, I think I told Joe that the one I liked best, like, they are all, you know, varying levels of serious and important. And the one I liked best was one with 2 white guys yelling at each other in a psychiatrist's office, which is really funny, I don't know what that says about my taste. But yeah, there's a lot of good ones in there.
It's 11 o'clock.
The 11 o'clock. Yeah. I thought that one was great.
It's funny. And it stands out from, like you said, the subject matter of everything else. But I thought I really liked DeKalb Elementary, which is a might be certainly might be tough to watch now because it's about
too timely.
The specter of a school shooting.
So what else have you guys been seeing? I have not been, because of the move and life being chaos, I have not been to that many movies. Like, I'm really behind on 2018 so far.
I couldn't totally get into A Fantastic Woman. I thought it was fine. But I was curious, Nathaniel, I think you really loved it, right? Or did you all love it? I can't.
I liked it a lot. I think love would be a strong word. It's not my favorite of the foreign nominees.
Okay.
I thought it was really good, but in some way limited. I don't really know how to point my finger on what I didn't love about it, but I thought it was smaller than I expected in a way, like more limited in sort of what it was trying to say.
Yeah,
it's interesting to contrast that movie with The Square, which I think is all about sort of the bigger picture things it wants to say, and
yes,
how much it succeeds sort of, to me, kind of wavers almost from scene to scene. But
totally.
Where I feel like Fantastic Woman feels a little more on the level, but it's an interesting contrast.
No, I would say it is, and thanks for pointing that out, because I do think they're both, to me, about the same level of quality, except for exactly what you're saying. A Fantastic Woman is super consistent, but I just don't think it's as ambitious as I was hoping, maybe.
Yeah, it seems to go exactly where you think it's going to go.
Even right? When there are signs that it might not. Like, there's a first conversation, you know, we've already worked out that some of the relatives are going to be pains in the ass, and then she gets the call from the ex-wife, who is like, girl, let's do this together. I want you to be involved in every step of it. And you can still tell how, like, socially weird and maybe even just not great, like, those conversations might be about how Marina is going to be treated by this woman. So we can feel something about, like, transphobia or prejudice in the way it comes out from people who think they're being friendly to you. But then that goes away also immediately when we meet her. So I just couldn't work, like, both in terms of the premise and in terms of, like, trans representation. I understood that most movies would be much more sensationalist, or at least a lot more loud. And so I didn't know if the ambition of the movie is sort of caught up in being as kind of borderline flat affectively as it is. And I know it's grief, but I even felt this way before the death. So I just was going back and forth between being impressed at what it was resisting, but also feeling like we could be doing more. And I certainly felt that way about the performance too.
My preferences in this category is either Hungary or Russia.
See, I couldn't connect to On Body and Soul at all, and I kept really wanting to, and it never happened for me, and I don't know, I was sort of bummed out by that. Talk to me about, sell me on it, because I want to.
Did you see it on Netflix or in the theater?
Yes, I saw it on Netflix. Yeah.
I think that's one of those movies that's really helped by sitting in a dark room with no distractions.
I can see that. I can totally see that.
Because that was one of the movies where it kept me guessing as to where it was going, even though if you hear it described to you, it will sound very, like, gimmicky.
I think I maybe wanted more gimmicky. I don't know. I wanted a little more whimsy, maybe is the wrong word, but...
Well, see, what I loved about it was that the whimsy was so opposed to so much else of the movie. Like, it was, like, such a strange mixture of, like, the grotesque and the whimsical and the sort of just mysterious. And I really liked how all those things kept colliding and never feeling comfortable with each other, just like the romance.
Yeah.
I just found it was... I mean, did anybody else see it? I thought it was great.
Yeah, I liked it, too, but that was the movie I saw after I got back from that, like, 20-hour bus ride back to the festival in the middle, so I was sort of struggling a little bit, but...
Oh, this was at Toronto.
This was at Toronto, yeah. Gotcha. So, and I mean, it's not like The Square in terms of being so kind of conceived as a series of scenes more than a movie, but it does have, it feels internally kind of various enough that I was into parts of it and not others. But
yeah. Do you think that's the front runner to win?
I have no idea. I love that we don't know that in so many categories.
Yeah.
I feel like this could go. I mean, honestly, I feel like it's one of those five-way races. I don't know if I'm making that up in my head, but it really feels up in the air to me.
Yeah.
Because I could see Lebanon winning.
That's the only one I haven't seen yet.
I was pretty disappointed, but not in ways that would keep it from winning, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What if we hate each other, but we're not totally different?
Oh
my God.
Nick, I love your one sentence reviews. Love them.
Do we think any of the acting categories are up in the air? I know, like, there is, like, Best Picture seems this sort of, like, thrilling kind of, like, nobody knows, and I do love that. But do we feel like all four of the acting categories are going to follow the Globes and SAG?
I do.
I just keep thinking that it doesn't take much for Gary Oldman to be totally knocked off his pedestal, and the fact that it hasn't happened yet with, you know, all of the things in his past is weird and maybe a testament to his publicist, but, like, I mostly think that if it was going to happen, it would have happened by now, but it still feels kind of crazy not to count on some, you know, last minute Franco level revelation that would knock him out. And then then does Timothée Chalamet win? That feels crazy too. So I don't know.
Of all the ways Sony Pictures Classics have fucked up the Call Me By Your Name rollout, like not deep sixing a very deep sixable Gary Oldman seems high on that list.
Yeah.
I still have a torch for, like, the Adrian Brody-ing of Timothée Chalamet that I feel like could happen. But I have an even bigger one for Laurie Metcalf.
Oh, like, my God.
I think that just the different levels at which those movies are adored and the desire for people to make sure Lady Bird wins somewhere and just the respect that she's got. And it did feel at the Globes and the SAG that people weren't super psyched in a certain way. Like, they seem really happy for Alice and Janney, but I don't think iTanya's PR team has figured out how to make people comfortable with the, like, totally Tanya forward sell they're giving on the movie, which I think is a lot subtler in the way it handles our feelings about Tanya than the campaign has been.
Hmm. Yeah, I think the movie definitely, like, the movie is so much more, to me, complicated than the campaign has ended up being, which I guess is, you know, better that than the other way around.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's generally true, but I will say, as someone who does not like the movie at all, that the campaign has soured me even more on it.
Yeah.
For those reasons.
I am getting worried about Lady Bird coming home with nothing. I think that there are some good arguments of it as being the Best Picture spoiler, which at this point, honestly, I'll take anyone's argument because any of them seem right. But I think
I was going to say they all seem like Best Picture spoilers.
Yeah, they really do. But it does feel like Get Out is a much likelier screenplay winner. And then after that, you really start running out of spots.
Yeah, I'm sad about this because it is my favorite, but I really think it's going to go home with nothing.
And, like, honestly, Lady Bird being a Best Picture nominee at all, being the kind of movie it is, like, that feels like a victory to me. And a lot of this year's nominees feel that way. So I'm trying not to be too up in arms on its behalf.
I have in recent years become a lot more sort of the nomination as its own reward, which became a punchline for so long. But, like, I really do feel that way. And it's tough for me to get too – I get much more bummed on nomination morning when something gets left out than I do on Oscar night when something doesn't win. Because I feel like the reward has been us talking about this for all these weeks and for it being – you know, it's going to be on this list forever.
Yeah.
You know what thing? I was writing an article this week and I was so – not shocked, but, like, the stat is sort of stark. In 89 previous years of the Oscars, only 11 times have Best Picture and Best Actress gone to the same movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's a few chances of that happening this year. Like, I don't think Sally's got a great chance of winning actress, but the fact that, like, Sally Hawkins, Frances McDormand, or Saoirse, and I guess, like, technically Meryl, but, like, that's not going to happen, could do Best Actress, Best Picture. And that's kind of cool that it's a year like that.
Yeah, the last one was Million Dollar Baby, right? Sorry.
Are you suggesting that Gary Oldman and Darkest Hour can't win?
Just that he's
you guys, I have to share this trivia thing I found out because, you know, as we were all saying, the nomination being a huge reward for Lady Bird. This is only the third time in the entire 90 years of the Oscars that someone making a high school movie has been nominated for Best Director.
Whoa.
I believe that. Yeah, I definitely believe that. What are the other two, though?
Yeah.
The other two are Mark Robson for Peyton Place and Jason Reitman for Juno.
Ah.
Yes. Isn't Breaking Away sort of a high school movie? Or American Graffiti?
Rewriting those record books right now.
Wait
a second. You found me out. Did
American Graffiti get a director nomination?
Oh my God, maybe I'm wrong.
Still, it doesn't seem like a lot.
We'll have
like
to delete this from the podcast because that's like really embarrassing to be too off.
The spirit of the point holds, though.
Yeah, oh, for sure. In 90 years? Like, yeah, absolutely.
Or a high school movie about a girl, for that matter.
Yeah. And the other thing I found in that Best Actress, Best Picture thing is that only Shirley MacLaine and is it Louise Rainer, the great Ziegfeld? Right? Yes.
For what?
Yeah.
What's the statistic?
The only Best Actress, Best Picture winners without a corresponding Best Actor nominee.
Ah.
Oh.
But I thought...
you've been in the weeds.
No.
I'm saying. Yeah.
No, because great Ziegfeld, what's his name, was nominated.
Okay, then it's...
But he was up for My Man Godfrey. He wasn't up for Ziegfeld.
Oh.
Thank you, Nick. Wikipedia, Nick Davis.
Shirley MacLaine in Terms of Endearment?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I've been writing about this for a few years, about sort of the disconnect between actress-fronted movies and Best Picture, and that Best Actress and Best Picture, there's often this, you know, gulf. But this seems like one of those years that it's, you know, not the fact that, like, four of the five Best Actress nominees are nominated in Best Picture, and that like I, Tonya probably was either 11th or 12th, or 9th or 10th or 11th.
Yeah, and if I, Tonya had been nominated, this would be the first time since 1977 where all the best actresses were in a Best Picture.
There we go. See, we got stats on stats for you.
I just can't get over the extent to which I tweeted about this, that like Greta Gerwig's nomination is like a big deal, but kind of quietly a big deal. Like the fact, like when Catherine Bigelow was the last woman nominated as Best Director, and it was such a huge thing. And I think it's partly because not too many people expect her to win, which is its own thing. But like also she's just a woman who directed a movie who's nominated for Best Director, and making a movie about women, which Catherine Bigelow didn't do. It's very heartening about more Lady Birds coming down the pike.
It's almost more of a genre triumph than it is a gender triumph. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like that Lady Bird, just that a movie that sort of small and personal didn't get overlooked for being that. Like we even see a lot of like there's been a little bit of a, you know, like, oh, Lady Bird wasn't that difficult to direct or whatever from some awful corners. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a sentiment that really needs to get sort of smacked down, and I think this is a good step towards doing that.
Well, and
it's also interesting to me how there have now been as many Black Best Director nominees as women, same stat, right? But like it's even quieter. That there have been five Black directors and five women directors, and if anything, it kind of always seems a little bit quieter about the statistics about Black directors. Like that happened between Lee Daniels and Bigelow, clearly because she had a shot at winning and did, but
mm-hmm.
But the rarity and like you're saying, Joe, the genre shock that Get Out would be in this group, even if it was also going to be in Best Picture, is I think both of those are pretty.
Yeah. And the fact that if Get Out does end up pulling out Best Picture, which I still think it could,
it's my, when forced to choose, it's still my pick, even though I also feel like it's wrong.
And then, so if that happens, and then Del Toro wins director, as we all are expecting him to, that'll be then three fairly recent, you know, very recent, you know, Black directors who have directed Best Picture winners who did not win Best Director, which...
That's bad.
Will be a thing going forward. I mean, it's already a thing now, but, like, it'll be even more of a thing going forward.
Yeah, I think Shape of Water is going to win Best Picture.
You do?
I just don't think it's divisive, and any other time recently
I've heard a lot of like derogatory fish fucker comments about that movie that sort of really sort of, and I know that there are, especially on this podcast, there are like legitimate reasons to not love that movie, but I feel like there is also, in addition to that, a lot of sort of like dismissing it out of hand in a way that could present some divisiveness.
See, because I haven't felt that in discussions about it. If anything, I felt like the people who don't like it just don't like it. But like the vitriol that usually greets things that end up losing, I haven't felt literally at all with that movie. Like, you know, if you think about the way people, I mean, if they could have thrown sewage drainage onto La La Land, they would have. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I just haven't seen anything like that with Shape of Water.
So and that Katie, is, yeah.
On your other podcast that you do.
Are we allowed to talk about it?
When you cheat on us and do your other podcast for your job. There was a fairly compelling case made for Dunkirk of all movies as a compromise choice, which was surprising to me when I heard it at first, but like explain the logic behind that.
Yeah, that was really like literally my reaction. So we had a guest on Daniel Joyot, who tweets as Third Man Movies and has a blog, and last year predicted Moonlight as the Best Picture winner, and based on kind of a really close read of the preferential ballot and thinking about not just what's on, not just what's number one, but then number two on the ballot. I mean, I think we all know that, you know, they take out the ones with the least votes and those votes become number two. Number two votes become number one. Anyway, yeah. It winds up being, especially this year, I think, is his argument that it's not just that you want to know what's going to be number two on the people who voted for Darkest Hour number one, like presuming that's the lowest votes. But like, we're probably going to have to go through many, many rounds of taking out ballots to get to something with more than 50% of the votes just because it's so divided. And at that point, you start looking for something that's going to be basically in the top five. So it's not even like a second choice for people, but will always fall middle of the ground in the most people's ballots. And Daniel is the theory was that that's either going to be Dunkirk or Shape of Water, and kind of going with Dunkirk as a slightly more traditional pick than Shape of Water. And he kind of convinced me that I'm still going to go with Get Out for kind of more gut reasons than anything. But I do think the centrist power of Dunkirk is maybe something we're all overlooking.
But yeah, I mean, I could see how that's plausible. But don't you guys think in a way it will be strange if Dunkirk wins and Chris Nolan doesn't, considering it is such a director's movie,
but also completely in keeping with Nolan and the Oscars, which even in victory they would find a way to make it a defeat. Like, it's kind of funny
the fact that the director narrative has coalesced around Del Toro is like a degree of difficulty win is so crazy to me with Christopher Nolan right there. Like, Del Toro has accomplished a lot and has good reason to be celebrated in the industry, but
he's more likable, though. That's the thing. He's a more likable person.
Yeah.
The thing with The Shape of Water winning both picture and director to me is, and I know Birdman is a very recent exception, but it's something that Guy Lodge and I were talking about on Twitter recently, which is that Best Director has sort of become the technical award. You know what I mean? The movie, the award for, you know, your favorite from the cinematographers and the visual effects people and the sound effects people. And, you know, that seems to be the Best Picture winner of sort of the techs. And then Best Picture as of late has been the more screenplay, acting, but I think even more than that, just the story that speaks to people. And that split has become fairly consistent with like Gravity, 12 Years a Slave, Spotlight, Revenant, Moonlight, La La Land. And I know that like it's a small sample size and it's recency bias, but it does feel like in the preferential ballot, new Academy era of like, you know, this influx of new voters, it feels like a thing that's been, you know, showing up again and again. And I think the Birdman exception is just that Birdman and Boyhood were both sort of these technical directorial achievements on different wavelengths, and then were both also these like story achievements on different wavelengths. And I think that one, just voters sort of ended up on the Birdman side on both of them, but I don't know.
So what do you think that gives an edge to, Joe, this year?
I think it gives an edge to Get Out. I think it gives an edge to Lady Bird. I think it gives an edge to Three Billboards. And then it's just a matter of who's less divisive. I think that sort of puts Three Billboards at a disadvantage. And who says more which movie says more, and I feel like that gives Get Out an advantage.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, my issue with it not giving the advantage to Lady Bird, and I've heard some people predicting Lady Bird, but I just don't think the Academy has changed enough to get over its bias against female stories.
Yeah. And I mean, small stories. Yeah. Like, it's kind of both of those things. Like, even Moonlight, I think, had a lot more flashy stuff to it than Lady Bird does. And I think it worked for Moonlight. That's not a knock on that. But it's a much smaller movie in that way.
You could give Moonlight a message. You could certainly give Spotlight a message. It's tough to give Lady Bird a message, you know, beyond, you know,
call your fucking mom.
Yeah.
which is a great message.
It's a wonderful message. Yeah. It's a wonderful movie. And yeah.
And Lady Bird's also funny. I mean, what was the last, like, are we counting The Artist as a comedy? It's been a while just for comedies in general.
Yeah,
that's true. I don't even have a hunch. I can't figure it out at all. But I hear the logic that you're talking about. It's like the degree of difficulty thing with directing. It just feels different if you're Cuarón making Gravity in 3D in the middle of outer space or doing a whole movie in one shot versus, like, she fucked that fish. And, like, I mean, it's a weird movie, but, like, is it really as kind of technically audacious as the other thing? Or, you know, Life of Pi, too, like that. It doesn't seem like as hard an undertaking as it just seems like bizarre and kind of like extremely optimistic that this is all going to work, which I think is something that he's been getting a lot of credit for. Like, how did you get all these people, not just on your side, but in love with your crazy vision of this that you've had since you were 11 or whatever. I mean, I am saying all this and still kind of expect him to win, even though I wish he wouldn't, but mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what to compare it to. And like it does seem like as many times as I've called Annette since Venice and been like, girl, what's going on? I saw Foxtrot. I saw The Insult. Was Edgar Wright mean to you? Like, did that Jasmine Trinka fuck it all up? But people who love the movie just love it. And yay. But I think people could be picture director voters on it.
I love the theorizing, and the preferential ballot has definitely made Oscar prediction, I think, more fun because Best Picture doesn't ever feel as sewn up as it once did.
Yeah.
But I still think it's going to be more a traditional year and so in terms of something winning both.
Here's my question. What steady ass hand are they going to select to present Best Picture? What, like, utterly
someone extremely young,
right? Like Hanks, where they just like keep him away from any kind of like distractions or the bar or whatever, or like whoever's presenting Best Picture is going to be like hermetically sealed in a tube. I feel like where they're just like, no, focus.
Like Scorsese, maybe, you know, he's still on top of his game.
Read every word on that card.
Just get Barack Obama to do it, most authority on earth.
Exactly.
I'd say let Andrzej Vyagintsev do it. Just be like, trust the Russian.
Like, at the very least, he would stare at that card for a good 7 minutes before cutting away, so you would know exactly what it reads.
I think maybe Oprah.
Oprah's not a bad idea.
Yeah,
that's actually a great idea.
It is.
I would personally love Catherine Bigelow to do it.
She seems pretty steady ass hand to defuse that bomb of the Best Picture envelope.
Yeah,
just because I get tired of it always being men, but.
Or like, I'm just saying, I'm going to be there. Like, I've already told them that I know Casey Affleck's not showing up, and that really feels like an opening to me. But
who better to present Best Actress?
I mean,
yeah, so for those of you who don't know, because it's probably many of you listening, will be at the Oscars. Bitter.
Yeah.
Film Experience Podcast has a mole in the system.
I don't even feel bitter because I don't think I deserve it as much as Nick does. Like, Nick has worked for this. He slept in a horse carcass to get this.
Speaking of Shirley MacLaine, like, Nick deserves this.
Yeah, the tempestuous brilliance of the rest of you deserve it as well.
Turbulent brilliance, Nick.
Turbulent. Oh, shit.
Don't make me start calling this into question.
Well, you have even flown to cities to visit libraries to watch Oscar nominees that are all but lost.
That's true.
So I think you deserve it.
Yes.
But it may also be a little wasted on me because my friend, the same friend who I'm going with, was a seat filler last year. And she's like, so definitely everything they say about the bar in the lobby, that is where you will meet everybody. I'm like, not if it means I'm going to miss sound editing. Like, I'm not leaving my seat. You can do whatever you want. Which may have to be rethought. I'm not sure.
I was going to say, this is triage at this point. Like, let's strategize here. There are ways that you can get the most out of this while still meeting Meryl and Dom at the bar.
Mm. It all depends how we define most, you know? Like, hey, Ren Kleiss, I see you. Yes.
If ever
hey,
there
Hoyta
was...
Van Hoytema.
If ever there was a reason for cloning technologically, this would be it.
True.
Oh, boy. All right, you guys, I've got to bounce off and take a train to Washington. So this
Wait, are you taking the train to Washington to see Ferdinand?
No, I'm going to see chess.
I knew you were debating this.
I figured out a way to see Ferdinand through like back channels, but like there was a second where like I was gonna have to take some time out of my trip to my like 24-hour trip to DC to see fucking Ferdinand because it's not playing in New York City here. So.
But I love that there's a Ferdinand black market that could be called on in this time of need.
Yeah. All right. Love you guys. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Is that the end? Are we just going to make that the ending?
I mean, we could just talk about Joe, if anybody has.